Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. My uncle's ghost story. My uncle Adam was good at telling ghost stories. When we went camping with everyone sitting next to the fire, we listened to his chilling stories. Usually he made them up, but we didn't know that. Although thinking back now, there was one story that was true and is hard to get out of my head. My uncle had gone out one night to a friend's place. I think it was a barbecue. I can't quite remember. My Aunt Julie stayed home. My uncle Adam didn't get back until 9 p.m. He decided to call it a night. On his way back home, he decided to give my Aunt Julie a call and ask if she wanted anything at the shop. The phone kept ringing, and he assumed she had gone to sleep early. Anyway, as he pulled up to the driveway, he saw Aunt Julie standing near the window and realized she was awake. As he stepped through the door, he started to talk to her, asking her questions. However, he didn't get a reply from the other room. The TV was still on, so she was probably sitting in the lounge room watching it. To his surprise, she was lying on the couch with a blanket over her and looking as if she were asleep. He suddenly thought she was joking with him and that she wasn't really asleep at all. So he started to poke and tickle her to wake her up. She woke up all right, but for real. He said to her, "I saw you out the window as I was pulling up. You're not really asleep." Aunt Julie looked at him funny and then replied, "What are you talking about? I have been asleep. You just woke me up." After finally realizing it wasn't her at the window, he decided there must be someone in the house and started to look in every room of the house for an intruder. But no one had broken in or gotten out. That night, he could hear faint noises in the house and couldn't get to sleep. Then, and this is the part that freaks me out, he said he could hear the door creak open so very softly and footsteps slowly walking in his room and then just disappearing. He doesn't really like to tell the story because it just creeps him out till this day, and I don't blame him. The deserted house. One day I was riding a bike with my best friend, but then out of nowhere my friend looked up and fell right off his bike. I don't know what happened, but whatever he saw, it must have been pretty scary to make him fall off like that. I checked to see what was wrong, and he said he saw a hand and face on the window of an old deserted house. I looked up and I saw nothing but the house. Then out of nowhere, I felt a rush of cold air come over me. Then more came rushing over my ear, and then I heard a bang on my friend's garage door. I looked back and a ninja star blade was lodged in it. We took it out and my mom called us in. I looked back and saw that the star was gone, but the cut in the garage was still there. On the way in, we planned to check out that house that night and get a group of friends to help. Over dinner, we asked our parents about the house, and they said a family was killed in that house by a break-in. After dinner, we got the gang together, and we went back. We had seven friends. We went in through the back door, and the gate was open. We decided to split into groups of 3, 3, and 1. I was the one. I went upstairs to the room of the window. I looked out the window, but no spirits. But I felt the same rush of cold air. Then I knew something was going to happen. A voice whispered to me, "Get out." I did not hesitate, so I stayed there. I walked out to find the rest of the guys, but before I walked out, I saw that a mirror was floating, and I saw a person in it with a robber outfit. He wrote on the mirror, "Get out." He also had a dead, decaying-looking body. I ran down to find them, and we all met at the same time. They all had a story of their own. "Wait, we were missing one of our party." We all looked around for an hour until we found her in a trance-like state. She finally snapped out of it, but couldn't remember what horrible things she had seen. And we didn't want to find out. We ran out of there screaming like little girls. The storm. I've always been sensitive to ghosts. When I was 6 years old and in the first grade, as long as I could remember, we had lived in our townhouse. My mother and I, along with my grandmother, who could stay with us off and on, and my uncles would visit frequently, as well as my father, since my parents were divorced. Well, Sunday night, we had a terrible storm, lightning, thunder, pouring rain. And of course, like many six-year-olds, I was scared to death. Not to mention that I hated being alone in my bedroom. Normally, when my grandmother stayed with us, she slept with me. This weekend, she returned back to her apartment on the other side of town. After countless attempts to sleep with my mother and being rejected, I returned to my room and laid in my top bunk with the blankets pulled up to my chin. Just as I was about to give up and cry myself to sleep, my mom came into the room and invited me to sleep with her on the bottom bunk. I didn't ask any questions. I just jumped at the offer and slipped down there with her. While the storm raged on into the night and all the lights were out, my room would only light up with a flash of lightning. I couldn't sleep. It was as if I was being watched, and I remember feeling the hairs on the back of my neck standing up. I looked around my room, stopping at every dark corner, which were only four, when I returned to the wall directly in front of me where my dollhouse sat next to my dresser. That's where I saw her. She looked like a rag doll. She had a head, but only the outline of where her mouth, eyes, and nose should have been. She had mitten-shaped hands with only thumbs unattached and was dressed in a doll-like fashion dress. I called her Ragdoll Ann because that is what she looked like to me. I remember trying to scream, but nothing would come out. I tried to move, but I couldn't. I closed my eyes thinking that if I stopped looking at her, she wouldn't be there. Well, when I opened them, she was still there. That's when she waved her left hand at me. For some reason, that enabled me to move once again, and I nudged my mom with my head. She woke up telling me to stop pushing on her. That's when I told her what was in the corner of my dollhouse and dresser. She ignored me at first, telling me to go back to sleep, but that a little doll girl was in my room. My mom sat up, looked at the corner, saw nothing, then laid back down. She then told me to go back to sleep. When I looked back, the girl was gone. She never again appeared to me in my room, but I could feel her. Years later, and many strange encounters with other ghosts since then, I finally told my grandmother about it. We were sitting in the living room of our new apartment, which, by the way, had four ghosts living with us. So I told her about the little doll girl on that stormy night, and she told me that before my mom and dad had moved into our townhome, a couple with a little girl had lived there. The daughter had become sick with some form of cancer and later died from it. After that, her parents moved out of the house. Now, how my grandmother knew the story, I have no idea. It never occurred to me to ask her either. But I believed her, and to this day, I believe what I saw on that stormy night. The camping trip. Earlier this year, my whole grade and a few teachers went off to a bush camp that they said would bring us closer together. It did. It was a night none of us will ever forget. It was the end of autumn, so it was still relatively warm. We went off to camp thinking that 3 days away from school would be so much fun. I was bunking with four of my friends, was happy about it. So on our first night, we played the game called Commando. We crept slowly, crouching, making sure we didn't make a sound and couldn't be seen. We heard leaves crackle under the weight of a foot and laid down on the ground near a tree stump. At the time, I was the only one who could feel it, but it went cold all of a sudden, which was unusual, and it remained cold for the remainder of the night. I looked ahead next to the stump and saw something lying there, and next to it something bouncing. In the silence, that was all I heard. "Can you hear that?" my friend asked. I looked at her and was silent while the rest talked. "Shut up," one of the others said, already afraid. "Can you see that there?" the third one whispered. We all looked in her direction, and I couldn't take it anymore. "Come on, let's go," I told him, getting up. We were all holding hands out of fear, so when I stood up, so did the rest of them. They were all quiet as they gave me weird looks, but there was a sudden gush of wind and we heard someone quietly crying. They didn't bother to fight anymore and we began to run. When we were a good 20 meters away from the tree stump, I told them what I saw. "You know how you saw something?" I asked my friend as she nodded. When we all looked that way, the figure I saw actually smiled at us. I looked down carefully as we came closer to our campsite. Commando was over. I had thought that was where this story ended, but there was more. We collected our flashlights and found our other friends. We took our respective seats around the campfire and listened to one of the instructors as he told us a story about a boy named Billy. The story went. Billy was from a small school out in the country who had come to stay at the camp where we were at for a little summer vacation for his school. Their school was divided up into three groups of 25, and Billy was put into an instructor's group. His name was Adrian. Well, they were fencing in this hall where there was a small yellow basketball in the corner. Adrian was going through all the instructions, telling them how to do this and that, and Billy just randomly got up and began to bounce the ball. Adrian, the instructor, got annoyed, so he began to ask, "Hey, put that ball down and sit," Adrian told him, but Billy wouldn't listen. "Put the ball down and sit," Adrian said again, angrily this time. Billy just kept on bouncing. Adrian, annoyed beyond hell, was about to walk over to Billy and tell him off before he was tackled by one of the teachers. After dusting himself off, Adrian asked angrily, "What was that for?" "That boy," the teacher pointed at Billy. "His name is Billy. He was our star basketball player." "Okay, what does that have to do with this?" Adrian asked. "Well, before we came to this camp, it was a basketball competition. We had made it to the finals, and Billy was allowed to make a penalty shot. We were down by a point, and if Billy had got this in, we would have won. But he choked, and we lost. Billy has never gotten over it, so every time he sees a ball, he goes and starts bouncing it," the teacher recounted while adding, "It only lasts for about 10 minutes. I can't do this, teach the class while he's bouncing that ball away," Adrian said, frustrated. Adrian just ignored it and went back to teaching the other kids how to fence. Another 10 minutes or so, Adrian told them to pair up and give it a try. That was when Billy came up to him and asked, "Can I join?" Adrian looked down in disbelief and told Billy, "No, you didn't hear any of the precautions." "Ask me anything," Billy said defensively. And Adrian did. He got every question right, so Adrian had no choice but to let him play. So the day went on, and Adrian let the experience slip his mind. So that night, they played commando, like us, and were put into teams. They all sat in their groups and listened to the instructions. One of the instructors, Jay, had just come back from basketball practice and thus had a basketball with him. So Billy went up and started bouncing Jay's basketball. "Hey, give that back," Jay said angrily, about to grab it from him, but Adrian tackled him and retold his experience. Jay let it go and listened to the commando instructions. After all the teams were put together, Adrian was approached by Billy. "Can I go find my team now?" Jay, who was standing with Adrian, scoffed and asked, "You don't know the rules." "Ask me anything," Billy said angrily. And Jay did, and Billy got every question right. "Fine," Jay said, not having anything against Billy, so he just let him go. So afterwards, they collected all the kids and they all sat around the campfire. The instructors did head counts. There should have been 75 kids, but after counting about 10 times, they only got 74. Group 1 was accounted for, so was group 2. Adrian's group 3, only had 24. So Adrian did roll call. He went down the list and everyone was accounted for except Billy. Adrian won again, but there was no Billy. Over the next few days, they sent out teams. Teams on instructors, teams of students, teams of teachers, and even the local police force. But there was no sign of Billy. This affected Adrian a lot. He felt so guilty about losing him, it was a sensitive subject for Adrian. But things got weird for Adrian when some of the fellow instructors told him they could hear basketballs bouncing in the dead of night and someone saying, "Ask me anything." Adrian thought it was a horrible joke until it happened to him. That was the end of his story. We assumed that was the end of the scary aura, but it wasn't. As we made our way back to our cabin, some people swore they could hear the line, "Ask me anything." We all ignored it and kept walking. My cabin mates and I were scared, so we pushed our beds together and slept like that. We all went to sleep pretty easily, I guess. I woke up in the middle of the night hearing something outside our window. I opened my eyes and saw my other cabin mates sitting in their beds, huddled together, all staring at the window. And that was when I heard it. "Ask me anything," a small, shrill voice said. In the background, we could hear a ball bouncing. It asked one more time, "Ask me anything," before it went silent again. We were all relieved that it was gone until we heard the ball bouncing. This time it was closer. It was in our room. Since I was the only brave one, I turned on the flashlight and flashed it at the door. There was nothing there. Believing that nothing was there, we hid under our blankets and went straight back to sleep. We knew this was the end. No more Billy. In the morning, we found a basketball near the door. None of us were sporty enough to bring a ball with us to camp. As scared as we were, we just assumed that a teacher had left it there by mistake. We all laughed weakly as we took the ball outside. Every morning, one of the instructors waits by a fire in case any of us need anything. We gave him the ball, in our pajamas, mind you. He took it, eyes wide, and sent us back to our cabin. That was the end of our experience, and camp was perfect after that. Although we did feel sudden gushes of wind, but we ignored it and went on with our day. I will never forget that night, and I will never forget Billy. The story of Jenny. Once a while ago, a young man was going to a school Christmas dance at his local high school. Once arrived, he walked inside. He was talking to some buddies when he happened to glance at this girl sitting on the bleachers. To him, she was beautiful. So he walked over to where she was. He smiled and said hello. She glanced at him and smiled. "Hey there," she said. "Hey, I'm Alec. Do I know you?" he asked her. "You look familiar to me. I think we had science together one year. And by the way, I'm Jenny," she said. And they talked for a while, and he finally asked her to dance with him. She accepted, and they danced and danced. When the dance was over, he asked to take her home. She agreed, and they went to his car. They talked for a while, and she asked for him to drop her off over at this spot, and that her cousin's place was just up the little hill, and that there had been an accident nearby, and he wouldn't be able to get through to the hill because of it. So he stopped and smiled at her and asked if he could take her out to a movie sometime. She said yes and decided to give her some tinsel he had gotten from the dance. She put it in her hair and began walking. He began to drive away and then realized that he didn't have her phone number. She couldn't have walked far, he thought to himself. As he drove along, he noticed something smoking a few feet up the street and nearer to the hill. He came to the source that happened to be a car that had run off the road and hit a tree. He got out of the car and walked to it and noticed someone was trapped inside. As he came closer and closer, he began to shake, for inside trapped was Jenny, dead, but with the tinsel still in her hair. The toe. It was a hot day, just like any other day. Bobby's family lived out in Arizona in a small town. They lived at the edge of town. The nearest house was 4 miles away from them. Bobby didn't mind being that far away. He never had many friends. The other kids in town always made fun of him. He had a very big imagination. It usually got him in trouble. Well, his curiosity usually got him in trouble, too. One day he learned the hard way that curiosity isn't always a good thing. Bobby's dad had been fired from his job a week ago. His parents were having a tough time putting food on the table. Lately, they were getting a little desperate. Bobby was just out digging around. It was his favorite thing to do. He decided to go out further than he usually did. He looked around and found a good spot to start. About 30 minutes later, the hole was about up to his knees and he hit something with his shovel. He looked down and saw something sticking up from the sand. Instead of just leaving it alone, he tried to pull it out. He pulled and pulled when it finally came out with a pop. And that's when he heard it. "Where's my toe?" Was he just imagining it? Nah, he thought. Probably just the wind. The kids in town are right. My imagination is going to make me crazy. He shrugged it off and ran home to his mom. "Mama, Mama, look at what I found." He showed his mother what he had found, and she picked it up. "Looks like a turnip or a potato. Good job, Bobby. We'll have it for dinner." Bobby felt really proud. He finally did something right. Later that evening, his dad came back from town. His dad had been trying to find another job. Today he had been successful. He had found a job at the lumber mill. While talking about what happened today, they calmly ate the turnip potato that Bobby had found. After dinner, they watched TV for a while. Then Bobby heard it again. "Where's my toe?" But yet again, it sounded like a whisper. He shook his head. "Just my imagination. Just my imagination." "Bobby, time to go to bed," his mother said. He said goodnight and went to bed. He lay there under the covers thinking about the voice that only he seemed to hear. His parents hadn't even looked around to see where it came from. Maybe it's from being in the sun all day long. His parents also went to bed about 5 minutes later. As usual, they left the light on in the hallway. He was almost asleep when he heard it again, but this time it was louder, and it seemed to be coming from right under his window. "Where's my toe?" Bobby got really scared, so he hid under his covers. He heard how whatever was outside his window started climbing the porch steps. He heard the wood creak under the weight of it. It slowly made its way over the door. He heard the screen door squeal as it opened. The door opened and then it slammed shut again. "Where's my toe?" Slowly he heard footsteps heading through the kitchen. A chair scraped against the floor. The footsteps finally reached the stairs. Every time a foot came down, he heard a thump, thump, thump. Bobby lay frozen underneath his covers. He could hear it coming down the hallway. And then they stopped. Bobby counted to 10, and the footsteps still hadn't returned. He decided to take a peek from underneath his covers. He peeked over and looked at the doorway. There it was. It looked like something, almost like a bear standing on its hind legs. Its hair looked greenish. He had sharp teeth that he was showing, but to Bobby's surprise, he started heading over to his parents' room. He heard screaming, but then it stopped. He heard footsteps coming again. He listened as they came closer and closer to him, and then they stopped again. He waited. He waited for something to happen, but nothing did. 10 minutes went by when Bobby finally decided to take a look again. Maybe it left. He slowly pushed the covers away and he found himself looking straight at the monster. "Where's my toe?" He sniffed the air and he smiled. And then it said something horrible before he felt a stab of pain in his foot. "I've got it." The old house. My father grew up in this creepy old house, which my grandparents still own to this day. They rent it out, and it's directly across the street from where they live at. Anyway, one day, my grandparents and parents were preparing to clean the house because new tenants were arriving soon. I went along to help. From the moment you walk in, you feel uneasy in this house. It's an old war-era house from the 1920s. Now, I myself have never experienced anything aside from creepy feelings, but my father, who lived there as a boy, had many stories to tell. His first room in that house he shared with my uncle. When he was about 10 years old, he awoke in his room at about 3 a.m. for no apparent reason, sat up fully awake to see a glowing shape of a man's body lying on the floor at the end of his bed. I later learned that a previous owner had died in the house. Maybe it was him. When he was a few years older, he moved his room to the basement, which I considered the creepiest place ever. It was unfinished and concrete for half of it, and the other half was a little suite with a bedroom, a kitchen, and a bathroom. While his parents went away for a weekend with my uncle and my father stayed home, he was by himself, but he was already about 18 years old. He was in his room dozing off one night when he heard the blow dryer in the bathroom next to his room turn on full blast. But the weird thing was, he hadn't used it that day. It was unplugged. He knew for sure. When he went to check, it turned itself off right away, but was plugged in. He unplugged it. The same thing happened 2 more times that night. Weird things would happen. Things would move. My grandparents would hear scratching noises and dragging noises, etc. Later, once my grandparents moved out, my father and mother married and decided to rent this house to give themselves time to save up for their own place later on. My mother knew nothing of these weird occurrences before she agreed to move in, or else she wouldn't have gone. Anyway, nothing much really happened during the 2 years they lived there, until their last night. My father again woke up in a different room this time, in the early hours for no apparent reason. He saw glowing above him and felt a strong presence, but couldn't move. I would have freaked out, but he thought nothing much of this. He felt this was the spirit's way of saying goodbye to him before he left. Anyway, I haven't been in that house since hearing these stories like 6 years ago, because in truth, I never want to have that face to face with whatever is there. The old barn. Much to the displeasure of our parents, we liked hanging out in the old barn. The barn was situated toward the back of the house and was a dilapidated, crumbling building that we were forbidden to enter. My brother and I usually went there at night, and with our flashlights, we would enter the barn through a side door that hung precariously on its last corroded hinge. It appeared ready to collapse at the tiniest provocation, so holding our breath and very careful to avoid touching anything, we would squeeze through the tiny opening to the inside. Scattered randomly throughout the interior were rusting farming implements, rakes, a scythe, and numerous long-forgotten other tools that no longer resembled anything useful. All the items appeared dangerous and capable of serious damage if they were mishandled or if careless passage caused contact with fragile skin. We kept our distance and tried to remain clear of these things, finding our usual seats in the center of the room on the old hay bales left there. The barn itself was pretty spooky, and in the darkness the outlines of the objects and decaying contents resembled the skeletons of the dead. But my brother and I liked it. We would go there and share spooky stories and get ourselves so frightened we'd barely find our balance to get back out the decrepit barn door, as we would literally be shaking in our boots. But the loft was the most sinister part of the barn. It was dark as pitch, and the ladder leading up to it had years ago crumbled into an unusable heap of kindling that lay uselessly on the barn floor. The few remaining steps appeared intact at the top, but at ground level, the decaying rungs appeared through the murkiness to be the gaping holes of a skeleton's dislodged teeth. We never went up to the loft and could only imagine its contents. Huge spiders covered with coarse hair and menacing fangs, their enormous eyes watched and waited for anyone who dared to ascend the rotting ladder to the elevated platform. Other than our mental images of the spiders, we had no idea what was in the loft. One night, we were in the barn sitting on the floor talking. During pauses in our conversation, we listened to the mournful groans of the old structure slowly, yet very audibly decaying. Why this caused us such fascination is unknown to me, but we were thoroughly enjoying the spooky, musty ambiance that was the old barn. My brother was telling his favorite ghost story for the 100th time in low, hushed tones. I was enthralled by the tale, as my brother was very good at making any story sound terrifying beyond belief. Just when the story hit its scariest point, a scraping noise began to emanate from the loft. At first we thought it was our overactive imagination, but the soft sound grew in intensity as we listened, almost as if the originator had waited to ensure its audience was paying attention. Then, for a second, the only sound we could hear was our heartbeats pounding wildly in our ears. We stared at each other with wild eyes, lids locked wide open, almost bulging. A chill ran down my spine. I grabbed my brother's hand and held it to me. I couldn't imagine what could be causing the sound, and in terror, I whispered loudly, "Michael!" At that, my brother shifted position and leaped over to sit beside me. He shook loose my grip and wrapped his arms around me, covering my mouth with one of his hands. "Shh," he whispered very quietly. Michael grabbed my hand and pulled me with him as he jumped up and ran for the door. We held our breaths as we squeezed through the passageway, careful to keep from touching the sides. We escaped the barn and ran out into the night, using all of our might to keep from screaming. We made it to the backyard and stopped, bending over and holding our sides, chest heaving. We gained our composure before we stepped into the porch and opened the screen door. Mom was there and said, "Time for dinner, kids." "I'm glad you're here," she continued. "A man escaped from jail tonight, and the police are on the lookout. You kids should stay inside. Guess the guy was a terrible, evil person. Murdered 5 people before he got caught." We half listened as we pulled our chairs to sit down. "Shouldn't be hard to find him, though. He had a metal hook for a hand. Gotta be pretty easy to find a fellow like that." "Well, did you kids wash your hands?" The Haunted Woods. Behind the house in a rural Midwestern town lies a dark wood. It is rumored that the wood is haunted, although the only report of such haunting is that of three young girls who encountered a spirit on a single autumn night. The source of the haunting was never investigated, and it is doubtful it ever will be. The house is now vacant, and the wood has been left to overgrowth. It all began when these girls decided to camp out deep inside the wood. Sally, Jennifer, and Brittany were all 13 years old. They had known one another since the fourth grade and were best of friends. Sally lived off a country road outside of town in a house surrounded by dense forest. There were no neighbors around for at least 5 square miles, with the nearest being Sally's grandmother and the home of an elderly couple. Sally always looked forward to going to school so she could have friends her own age. One day, Sally had the idea of camping out in those woods. From her previous explorations, near the perfect site, far from the prying eyes of parents. It was in a pine grove where the ground was very soft, with a nearby clearing that would retain their campfire. Sally got the excited agreement of her two friends, who in turn got permission from their parents. The campout was a plan. It was a Saturday in late September. The weather was still warm, but being early autumn, the nights were chilly and dark. They set up their tent in the afternoon. They also constructed their fire ring, gathered firewood, and carefully selected branches that would hold their hot dogs and marshmallows. At dusk, they took their sleeping bags, flashlights, and a cooler full of snacks and headed down the path to their tent. They joked and shared stories while they started their campfire. Once the flames were to an acceptable level, they formed their lawn chairs into a circle and pulled out the package of hot dogs as well as their pre-made sticks. They were sitting in their chairs, roasting their frankfurters and talking. The night had arrived and a chill was setting in. If you've ever sat around a campfire, you know that the area outside the glow of the fire is pitch black. It was from this blackness that the sounds of snapping twigs and the rustling of leaves came. Jennifer was the first to hear the sounds and exclaimed in a loud whisper, "What's that? Shh, listen." Brittany froze mid-sentence and Sally leaned forward in her chair, straining to hear. For a long moment, there was nothing but the crackling of the fire. Then Sally chided Jennifer for her outburst. "Jennifer, it's nothing. You're scaring us. Now cut it out." As soon as she uttered those words, a tremendous wind whipped through the woods, blowing a cloud of pine needles and leaves into the air. The debris hit their faces and stung their eyes. The wind blew their hair and upended their gear. It was so fierce and so abrupt that it almost put out their fire. Sally fell out of her chair in order to avoid being hit by the gust of flames that leaped in her direction. Then the wind stopped as suddenly as it started. The girls were terrified. They sat motionless for a moment, not knowing what to do next or what to expect. The woods were completely silent. Then from the direction of the deepest part of the forest came a wailing so loud and so tormented, it was horrifying. Covered their ears with their hands and tried to block out the lamenting shriek. It was a sound they had never heard before, and they knew it was not of this world. Jennifer was the first to break the reverie. She sprang from her position in the direction of the house. Seconds later, Sally and Brittany did likewise. Their reaction was so instantaneous they didn't think about grabbing a flashlight. They darted through the inky forest, tripping over logs and lumbering through the underbrush. If they stumbled, they quickly righted themselves. Mindless of the tears in their clothing or the scratches they suffered, their only objective was the safety of Sally's house. They finally made it to the back porch and were met with a confused, sleepy gaze of Sally's mother, who stood in the kitchen, clenching her bathrobe. Out of breath and shaking, the girls gradually described in broken sentences what had happened. Sally's mom listened while her dad, hearing the clamor, arose from his bed and joined them in the kitchen. After listening to the story, he quickly dressed and ventured out to the campsite to investigate the matter and to extinguish their fire. He was gone for over an hour. When he returned, his face was pale. He was solemn and seemed distracted. He didn't say a word and would not comment on what he had found, no matter how many times Sally or her mom pleaded to know the outcome. The girls were sent home to their parents, and it would be weeks before any of the girls would be able to sleep soundly. They all vowed they would never camp again. The next day, Sally's family received word that her grandmother had passed away. In the ensuing days, the incident in the woods was dropped from conversation. As time passed, the family moved on. The girls remained friends to this day, but the memory of their campout are etched in their minds. That night will never be forgotten.